This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to The World Today. I'm Sally Sara. This Monday, young COVID. Why are some young people getting hit so hard by the COVID Delta variant? And we take a look across the ditch. How long do you think it's been since New Zealand has had a case of community transmission?
We don't have any cases here at the moment, and we haven't had a case of transmission in the community now for almost 5 months. And that's, I think, our longest run with no community transmission in New Zealand.
The New South Wales Chief Health Officer says illegal movement between households in parts of Sydney is behind the continuing spread of coronavirus. The state's COVID response is preventing a rapid escalation, but has failed to bring down the number of new cases. Our reporter Isabel Rowe has been monitoring developments and joins us now. Isabel, good afternoon. The overall trend of this outbreak is still going up. What's happening?
Yeah, Sally, there were 145 new cases today, the biggest set of numbers in this outbreak so far, and 51 of those were in the community the entire time they were infectious. And that, unfortunately, is the highest number so far in this outbreak. Another 25 were in the community for part of their infectious period. So it is still an upward trend, and it's not great news for what might happen after the 31st of July. We can expect news in coming days about what sort of restrictions we'll see past the end of this week when lockdown was meant to end. And there will also need to be a decision, of course, about what that means for the financial support that people are relying on at the moment. There's some good news. There's been reduction in movement and transmission in the Fairfield local government area, where the worst part of this outbreak really began. But the focus is now on the Canterbury-Bankstown area in particular. Authorities say that people are still visiting other households while they're infectious, possibly when they don't know that they are. But that is against the rules. You can go and exercise or go for a walk with one other person outside your household, but it must be outside. But Dr Kerry Chant, the Chief Health Officer of New South Wales, says there are clearly people still breaking those visitation rules.
And can I just express my deep understanding of how it is so important, people's extended families and friends. But at this time, when we're responding to such a crisis, it's really important that people only stay within their household unit and don't have any mixing between households.
And Isabel, what about on the issue of trying to get more vaccines into southwest Sydney? What's happening there?
Yes, well, it was mentioned last week that this would be a plan to try and get more vaccines to reduce the rate of transmission. There is no exact plan yet. New South Wales Health has been looking at which groups of people are driving the outbreak. And they say what's been interesting is that people are mostly young, they're moving about, so they're essential workers. People in logistics and distribution, critical workers that are going in and out of Sydney and even to other parts of New South Wales. Dr. Kerry Chant says that she thinks New South Wales could do 350,000 vaccines a week if there wasn't a supply issue with Pfizer. And on Friday, the Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, asked National Cabinet to redirect some supply to New South Wales to send to these areas. But unfortunately, the National Cabinet said no. And even with AstraZeneca, Dr. Kerry Chant says she's quite distressed at how few people who are eligible and who have been eligible for months now have failed to get it done.
But we do have a good vaccine, which is AstraZeneca. And as I've said, we've used that. I would just urge you to get vaccinated and take up the opportunity for accessing AstraZeneca. It is actually quite distressing when I've reviewed the numbers to see how few over even 60-year-olds and over 70-year-olds we have managed to reach. And for me, anyone who is over 60 or over 70 should be going to their doctor as a matter of urgency.
And Isabel, what have officials said about those lockdown protests in Sydney on Saturday?
Yeah, well, there's been widespread condemnation from authorities about the fact that those protests were held. And there have since been 10,000 reports to Crime Stoppers from people who've essentially dobbed in people that they knew or saw on social media who were at the rally. There were a few across major capital cities. There were some clashes with protesters and police as well as they marched through Sydney CBD. Many of those people weren't wearing masks. Police say they've issued 227 tickets overnight for breaches of health orders in Sydney. 107 were linked specifically to that protest. The New South Wales Police Commissioner, Mick Fuller, says that they are working on tracking down everyone.
We have a strike force established and they will continue to investigate and chase down every individual that we can identify will be either arrested and or given tickets for their behaviour. And it's not just about whether it's an unauthorised protest, it was about the danger that they put all of us at in terms of the Delta variants.
That's the New South Wales Police Commissioner, Mick Fuller there, and before that, our reporter, Isabel Rowe. Well, to Victoria now, where there's no word yet on whether the statewide lockdown will lift as planned tomorrow night. The state recorded 11 new cases today. All had been in quarantine for their entire infectious period. Our reporter, Sam Donovan, joins me now. Sam, when might Victorians hear if the restrictions will be lifted tomorrow night?
Well, there's no firm word as yet, Sally. It looks like the announcement will probably be made tomorrow morning. So the suspense for Victorians continues. The state has 11 new locally acquired cases today and all of them are linked to the current outbreaks and all of those people were in quarantine for their entire infectious period. So that is good news. Victoria's Health Minister Martin Foley says the decision to lift the lockdown needs to be made on the most up-to-date data available. So nothing's finalised as yet, but he says an announcement will be made as soon as possible. Because the latest cases over the weekend were all in quarantine, the signs, though, are looking pretty good. But nonetheless, Mr Foley says there's still some concern about the case numbers over the last couple of days.
But it is still 22 cases. 22 cases over 2 days is a significant figure. Equally, we do take some comfort from the fact that they've all been in quarantine for the entirety of their infectious period. What it points to is that we are on the right track.
And Sam, across the border, what's the latest on the lifting of restrictions in South Australia?
Well, it's looking pretty good, Sally, for South Australians. The lockdown in that state is on track to lift as expected at midnight tomorrow night. There's been one new case reported overnight, but that fortunately was linked to the current cluster. If the lockdown does lift tomorrow night, though, South Australia will move to new restrictions for at least 7 days. But the Premier, Stephen Marshall, says he's been very happy with the public response in his state.
That the people of South Australia are taking this extraordinarily seriously. They're working with SA Health, they're working with SA Police, they're doing the right thing, they're minimising movement around, they're getting tested, they're using the QR codes and they're booking in for their vaccinations when due.
And Sam, what about Queensland?
Well, authorities there, Sally, are keeping a close eye on a few cases of concern. A man has tested positive on the Gold Coast after returning from China and completing his hotel quarantine. The man in his 40s was fully vaccinated and so far his family and close contacts who are in isolation have tested negative. Another man, though, tested positive after allegedly fleeing lockdown in Sydney and heading north. He infected a close contact who was a flight attendant. So an urgent contact tracing effort is underway in Queensland and exposure sites have been named relating to the movements of that pair. But so far there haven't been any more positive cases connected to them.
Good on you. Thanks, Sam. That's our reporter, Samantha Donovan, in Melbourne. Well, the death of a woman aged in her 30s in Sydney over the weekend is a grim reminder that COVID-19 is a serious risk to young people. Australia's peak vaccine advisory body, ATAGI, is now urging all Sydney-siders above the age of 18 to get any vaccine available to them as quickly as possible, including AstraZeneca, as Bridget Fitzgerald reports.
Like millions of Americans, Tate Ezi and his wife Christine had put off getting the COVID vaccine.
Just thought we were young and pretty healthy and if we did get it, it wouldn't be too bad. So it was.
Despite being young and healthy, the couple from just outside Little Rock, Arkansas, contracted COVID-19 in May. Christine Ezi, who was expecting their 6th child, ended up on a ventilator before losing her baby.
We lost the baby at some point between when she was on the vent and went on the ECMO machine. I'm not exactly sure. We just know the baby was stillborn. So that all we know is the oxygen just dropped too low at some point.
Tate Ezi now has a message for anyone hesitating to get the vaccine.
I do want to just tell my story because it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody.
Of the more than 900 deaths from COVID-19 in Australia, only six have been in people under the age of 49. But the death of a 38-year-old international student, Adriana Maduri-Takara, from the highly contagious Delta variant, is a reminder age is no protection from the virus. The Brazilian woman arrived in Australia in 2019. She had no underlying health conditions before contracting the virus. Her friend, Marlene Coimbra, runs migration consultancy Superstudent Headquarters and helped the young woman secure a student visa and get into business school.
When they had the first test, Adriana was negative and her boyfriend was positive. A few days later, Adriana had the second test and then she was positive. Just so quickly, you know, how her body disintegrated. It's just terrible.
I think a lot of young people thought for a time that they kind of had a free pass with this.
Immunity and infection expert Professor Peter Doherty says although the risk of young people dying from COVID-19 remains low, they are at greater risk of becoming seriously unwell, particularly with the Delta strain.
We all focus on deaths with this thing, and basically it's also causing a lot of other problems. People that come out of hospital and survive can have really severe problems that will go for the rest of their life. And there's also this terrible long COVID thing, which gives people chronic fatigue, which can last for months and more. And that's always been just as prevalent in young people as it is in older ones.
With the risk of contracting COVID-19 increasing during the outbreak in Greater Sydney, Australia's peak vaccine advisory body, ATAGI, is urging anyone over the age of 18 to get any vaccine available, including AstraZeneca. Dr. Charlotte Hespy, a Sydney GP and chair of the New South Wales and ACT branch of the Royal Australian College of GPs, says that's important advice.
We do know that the risk of getting infected with COVID in Sydney is considerably higher than any risk associated with the vaccine, but more to the point that the vaccine is very effective at protecting both from getting infected, passing the infection on to others, and most importantly, being hospitalised and then dying.
Is that something that people are getting on board with? Are you noticing more bookings for vaccines from across the age spectrum?
Absolutely. And can I say that GPs have done a magnificent job in the last week. They have managed to cope with the really big call on getting vaccinated. And that has actually seen us using 100% of our vaccine allocation in the past week.
That's Sydney GP Dr. Charlotte Hespy. Ending that report from Bridget Fitzgerald. On ABC Radio across Australia, streaming online and on the ABC Listen app, this is The World Today. While some Australian states battle the Delta variant, New Zealand remains a world leader in containing the virus. The Kiwis haven't had a case of community transmission since late February. New Zealand has its own hotel quarantine and isolation program, but very few day-to-day restrictions on its citizens after going hard and early at the start of the pandemic. Michael Baker is Professor of Public Health at the University of Otago.
We don't have any cases here at the moment, and we haven't had a case of transmission in the community now for almost 5 months. And that's, I think, our longest run with no community transmission in New Zealand.
And what about deaths from COVID?
We've had 26 deaths in total, and the last one was in February. This was a returning traveller who went into quarantine facility and then was transferred to hospital and unfortunately died.
And what's the situation in New Zealand with vaccination? What's your vaccination rate at the moment for first and fully vaccinated?
Well, we've got 20% of the population has had one or more doses and 14% are fully vaccinated. We're using entirely the Pfizer vaccine, so there's not such a long interval from the first to the second dose.
And has New Zealand had trouble with supply?
Yes, I mean, that's our rate-limiting step at the moment. And between now and the end of the year, there's meant to be a total of 10 million doses coming, so enough to vaccinate the entire population. So we're expecting to see a huge increase in the rate of vaccination over the next 5 months.
What about vaccine hesitancy in New Zealand? Is that much of an issue?
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, what's happened, and I think this is around the world, as the vaccine's rolled out, the proportion of people who say they'll have vaccine has got bigger. So in other words, the group who are anti-vax or hesitant is getting smaller steadily. I think people are looking to the future for travel and so on and just realising that it's very important to get vaccinated.
And what kind of restrictions are New Zealanders living under at the moment?
Essentially no restrictions. There is still a requirement for mask use on public transport and air travel. There's obviously people are encouraged to scan in with the QR codes at indoor venues, but it's not mandatory. I think it should be mandatory. But other than that, there are really no restrictions at all.
And what about for sporting events, concerts, theatre performances, that sort of thing?
No restrictions.
What's the mood like in New Zealand at the moment, watching what's happening across the ditch, particularly in New South Wales?
Well, I think there is anxiety because that could be us in a week's time. I think everyone appreciates that, particularly with the more infectious Delta variant.
What about the issue of social cohesion in New Zealand? Have you had any large-scale demonstrations when restrictions have been in place or large-scale anti-vaccination demonstrations?
We have had small demonstrations in our main centres, but nothing very significant. I mean, it may also partly reflect the fact that really New Zealand has had very low level of restrictions for the last 15 months. Most of the country has had no lockdowns apart from the initial lockdown in March, April last year, which basically eliminated the virus after its first wave. And since then, there have been small lockdowns just in Auckland, just literally a few days. But otherwise, the country's had very few restrictions.
What do you think has been New Zealand's secret to success?
I think that we basically embraced a very explicit elimination strategy right at the beginning. I think our leaders listened to the scientists and were very clear. And it's quite a high bar, tolerating no transmission in the community. But I think that had a strong unifying function. I think since then, it's been a mix of good management and quite a bit of good luck as well. And being a small society, I think a lot of social cohesion, a strong social license for what the government's done, very good messaging, I think, throughout has been helpful. But it's also worth remembering that we have gaps in our responsiveness, and I'm constantly looking at what Australia's doing. And I think the remarkable achievement, I thought particularly in Victoria, last year when you had a very intense pandemic wave, people were doubting that you could contain that, and you did. And I think that's still one of the most successful responses in the world, and I think it's inspired a lot of people.
That's Michael Baker, Professor of Public Health at the University of Otago, taking us through the situation at the moment in New Zealand. Well, Australia's anti-lockdown protests may have made the world news, but we're not the only country dealing with big demonstrations in a deadly pandemic. Violent protests in Tunisia have turned to celebrations as the country's president sacked the prime minister, and thousands of people have taken to the streets in Italy to protest against government health policies. Carly Williams has this report.
Anger erupting in the streets. Facing one of Africa's worst COVID outbreaks, Tunisia recently imposed coronavirus lockdowns and other virus restrictions. Crowds of mostly youthful Tunisians shouted "Get out!" and waved signs calling for the dissolution of parliament and early elections. But within hours, there were fireworks and tears of joy. Tunisia's president, Kais Saied, sacked the country's prime minister and promised to quickly name a successor to bring calm to the country.
This decision will freeze all the powers of the parliament. The constitution doesn't allow the parliament to be dissolved, but it does not stand in the way of freezing all its work.
The move will see the president assume executive authority in what's viewed by his opponents as a challenge to the nation's democratic system Tunisia introduced in its revolution a decade ago. But protesters have welcomed the move.
Regarding this decision, it's the first time in my life I have heard a head of state take a correct decision. We have taken back our country.
There's been protest too on the streets of Italy, with thousands of people in Milan and Naples rallying against the country's green card, a pass that'll show people's health status to access venues. To qualify for the card, individuals must prove they've recovered from COVID in the last 6 months or tested positive in the previous 48 hours or have at least one jab. The Green Pass will allow access to gyms, museums, movie theatres and the inside of restaurants, a move the government says will avoid further lockdowns. Similar measures are being rolled out in France, where anyone seeking to enter bars, shops, public transport or get on a plane must prove evidence of a vaccination or a recent negative COVID result. Some resort towns have set up testing booths so those who aren't vaccinated can have a rapid test and enjoy a night out, and some clinics are starting to charge for the service. Closer to home, and Malaysia has surpassed 1 million coronavirus cases as the Delta strain slams its public healthcare system. The country's been in lockdown since June and has tried to speed up its vaccination rollout, but it recorded more than 17,000 cases on Sunday. Local Chris Thu says the vaccination program is not moving fast enough.
This is a really, really an alarming number to be taken lightly off. Because we have seen the United States, we have seen neighboring countries, we have seen so many countries who took the fall. And right now, what I see is Malaysians are still at a very relaxed pace.
The country aims to vaccinate 80% of the population by December.
That's Carly Williams there. Finally today, the Treasurer Josh Frydenberg has once again rejected calls for the return of the JobKeeper wage support, despite the deepening lockdown crisis in Greater Sydney. With more, I'm joined now by our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Peter, good afternoon. Why won't the Treasurer bring back JobKeeper?
Well, hi Sally. Josh Frydenberg says the lockdowns in Sydney and Melbourne are a different set of circumstances compared to more than a year ago when much of the nation was locked down. But JobKeeper did succeed in reducing a lot of anxiety at that time. But there are very good reasons for the reluctance, mainly the massive cost, $90 billion. The program ended in late March, but it was critical in maintaining the relationship between employers and workers administered by the tax office. But of course, there was political flack given that some big employers pocketed the cash while making big profits. This time around, Mr. Frydenberg says around 700,000 payments have been made directly to workers through Services Australia, worth around $350 million. 90% of payments have been made online, and the money is flowing to sole traders, small and medium businesses, and not-for-profit organisations. So no backing away, but Mr. Frydenberg did say he'd continue to assess the best emergency support given the rapidly changing circumstances.
Well, our policies are never set and forget. And one thing that COVID has taught us is you don't never know what's around the corner, and you have to be flexible and you have to be able to respond to the changing set of circumstances. So we continue to assess all our payments, both business and income support, and to determine the right payments for the right circumstances. As I said, the payments that we have in place today, both income and business, are providing very significant support to those in need. But there is inbuilt flexibility in our welfare system for people's welfare payments to go up if they've lost hours of work.
Peter, how much pressure is Josh Frydenberg facing from the conservative side of politics?
Well, Sally, that pressure's right across the board. Business groups, trade unions, the ACTU, social welfare groups. It's also coming from the prominent businessman and company director, Tony Shepherd, a former president of the Business Council. He also chaired Tony Abbott's Commission of Audit, a sort of a razor gang when the government was cutting costs. But Tony Shepherd says JobKeeper would be money well spent. Small and medium businesses in particular are crying out for emergency support.
I think that the federal government really needs to seriously look at whether to bring back JobKeeper to New South Wales and to Sydney in particular. A lot of businesses in New South Wales in the areas that are locked down are really suffering. And they can be big businesses, medium businesses, and small business, but the small businesses have already had a terrible 18 or 19 months. They've got debt, they've got obligations to meet, and they are really, really struggling.
Peter, what are the chances of a double dip recession?
Well, Sally, there's now consensus that the lockdowns will put a serious hole in September quarter GDP with a 0.7% contraction. The risk of a second consecutive quarter or a double dip recession is now hostage to lockdown restrictions easing and no more significant lockdowns in the coming months. And given what we're seeing in Sydney at the moment in particular, there are growing concerns that a double dip recession might not be avoided.
Peter, thank you. That's our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. That's it from the World Today team for this Monday. The PM team will be along tonight. They'll keep you up to date with everything that's going on across the country and around the globe. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. I'm Sally Sara. Take care.
Hi, I'm Ange Lavoie-Pierre.
And I'm Stephen Smiley, and we're from the ABC's daily news podcast, The Signal. Australia's borders have been closed to the world for 18 months, but for one group of people, the entry ban goes back much further than that. Lawyers estimate there are more than 1,000 people trapped in Australia's immigration detention system, and today we're sitting down with one of them.
Arab-Iranian refugee Logman Sawari's 8 years in and out of immigration detention tells the story of Australia's harsh yet inconsistent policies on refugees and asylum seekers. So what's the point of keeping him and the others in legal limbo? And will they ever get out? Look for The Signal on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.